want to talk about some of the results in a study that we did looking at the effects of Mormon cricket control on the non-target arthropods in northern Utah. And Mormon crickets, for those of you that don't know, or well, even if you do know this, it still happens, they can achieve enormous population sizes. They've been known to close interstate highways because the carcasses make the highway so slippery that people can't drive. And so there have been attempts to control them from fencing to religious invocation of seagulls. And the current use of Dimlin or difluvenzuron is the accepted practice now. It's aerial application. They fly it in strips, alternating strips of spray and non-spray within the treated areas. Dimlin is a general chitin inhibitor, so it affects all arthropods. So it's not surprising that we might suspect that there's an impact on the non-target arthropods in the community. It's particularly bad for aquatics, and they try to have a buffer area around riparian systems. And we have an aquatic component to the study as well, but I'm not talking about that. But it could affect pretty much any insect that is going to molt after the application. If the insect is already an adult when it comes in contact with Dimlin, then it's not affected. But if it's a larva or a nymph, then it could be affected, or if it continues to molt throughout its life, like crustaceans or maybe spiders and that sort of thing, then it could be affected. So we had three sites in northern Utah. Grouse Creek was actually the only. We had this grand plan to look at a number of areas with treated and adjacent untreated areas, but the spring of 2005 was really cold and wet, and most of the eggs of the Mormon crickets died in the soil, and that's actually the ultimate control of any of these outbreaks, is that weather changes and the populations crash. So Grouse Creek, way up in that northwest corner, was the only place that actually had a treatment that year. And all of these will show the stars are the untreated, the big stars are the untreated pitfalls, and the circles are the treated pitfalls. And so the area inside the blue line was sprayed with Dimlin. And then we had two sites that we were anticipating studying, and when they didn't treat, then we went back and they had treated in 2004. So we looked at a potential lag of the 2004 treatment, but they were sampled in 2005. So we sampled inside that area that had been treated in 2004, and then outside that area. But all the sampling was done in 2005. The same is true at Vernon. We put out 60 pitfall traps at each site and left them open for 3 days. And occasionally we'd get a large organism. Sometimes it was an insect like a Jerusalem cricket. Sometimes it was a scorpion or a mouse or a lizard early in those 3 days. And by the end of the 3 days, they were attracting carrion feeding insects. So we had some biases in a few of the traps that we had to pull out. This is just a quick, messy slide of the total results at the order level, just to give you an idea of the variability. But flies in blue, green are the Hemiptera, both Homoptera and Heteroptera, and the tan are ants. So across the board, pretty much those were the three groups that dominated numerically. And the proportion of the total number of individuals that we caught that were ants at the different sites varied quite a bit. Grouse Creek area had fewer ants than Ibapah or Vernon. This may have been because that sampling was late May and late June, pre-treatment and post-treatment samples. Ibapah and Vernon were sampled in mid to late July. It could be the site differences. But in no case does it look like the total number of ants differed between treatment and, treatment and non-treatment. So the Grouse Creek sites before treatment and after treatment in the area that was never treated, and then before and after treatment with the red in the areas that were actually treated, the ant numbers declined in both of those, so there probably wasn't an effect of the treatment itself. And these are just pie charts of the genera that were represented. We had 19 genera total, and all of this analysis has been done only to genus so far. 4 to 11 genera at any particular pitfall array. So these are on the left are the untreated Grouse Creek sites before and after. Top is before treatment, after is post-treatment. On the right are the treated sites before and after treatment. So you can see there are some differences before and after, but they, if you look, and I'm not going to let you see long enough to look really closely, but the changes before and after in the untreated are similar to those in the treated. So it doesn't look like that 1 month sample period, that time frame, changed the ant community at all. On the other hand, at Ibapah, on the left and Vernon on the right, the untreated areas at the top, treated areas at the bottom, you can see there are some community differences that maybe indicate that at least correlation with the treatment itself. So if we look at that a little more closely, we'll start down here. This is just the treated area of Grouse Creek, and the pre-treatment and post-treatment at the same set of pits. So we left the pits in the ground, put caps on them, and came back a month later. So this is at exactly the same place. So you can see there are some differences over that month, but there's no, if you looked at the untreated area, and I didn't show that just to save space here, but the changes are similar, they're not dramatic, and there's no real pattern that would indicate that treatment is having an effect. But if you go up to Ibapah and Vernon, in these cases, the four bars on the left are untreated, the four bars on the right are treated. And you can see here, the big pink bars are Forelius. One of the untreated sites did have quite a few Forelius, but the trend is for a lot of Forelius in the treated sites a year after treatment, and very few, where'd that arrow go? This mouse tends to walk by itself. Very few Forelius over here. And in contrast, you have on this brick is Tapanoma, and the green are the Formicas. And so there are more Formica, more Tapanoma in the untreated areas than in the treated areas at Ibapah. And the same sort of pattern shows up over here in Vernon, with Formica only being found in the treated zone, Tapanoma only in the untreated zone. Formica is in both, but more abundant in the untreated pitfall arrays than in the treated arrays. Vernon was also the only place where we had Monomorium, and it was found at all of the sites, but there is a slight trend toward more of them in those untreated or in those treated areas. This is an ordination, just again to show how those communities fell out. The green dots are the untreated Grouse Creek sites. Light and dark are pre and post treatment. The red stars are Grouse Creek treated areas, pre and post, and you can see they cluster pretty much. This is the one Grouse Creek site that had Forelius, and the pairs of these light and dark points, they're typically the two that are closest together are the two pre and post treatment surveys at the same place. So again, indicating that there's a very little change in the community. The Ibapah treated sites are these dark blue stars down here. You can see they're clustered and have a different community structure than most of the other sites. This is that one Ibapah untreated area that had Forelius and Vernon separated out over here. Oops. Again, because of the Monomorium, pulled the axis over. And we'll skip that. So, possible mechanisms. This thing is slower than my finger. Infiltration into the nest itself. If you have these above ground nests with coarse material, you could perhaps get Demlin down into the larva, and they could contact him directly, or moving material into the nest and feeding that has been contaminated by the Demlin is another possibility, or impacts on other parts of the system, like if the Hemoptera are affected, then Hemoptera tenders may be affected, and that would have a lag effect on the system as well. This project wasn't really designed, it wasn't designed in advance of the applications. It was designed in response to the best way we could get around how they were going to apply Demlin, and so I'm trying to get them, now that we have some evidence of this lag, perhaps to look at maybe some experiments where we can get at that a little more closely. And then just last, a few people have asked me, you know, how do you know if you're dealing with Mormon crickets? And the eminent entomologist Pat Bagley of the Salt Lake City Tribune has provided that taxon or morphological characteristics so that you can tell if you're dealing with Mormon crickets or not. Thank you.
Time for one question?
Yeah.
How long did the Demlin last for the
environment? I don't know right offhand. That chemistry part has not been something that I've looked into carefully yet. Sure. Will it? On the Ferelius? Yeah, it's possible that they might be able to deal with responses to the food changes better. They might be more of a generalist or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.